And it's 26 and a half past the hour on a Transcendent Tuesday. Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and an expert, as we've been learning, on the book of Daniel, which relates closely to Revelation. And seeing the two tie together will knock you over. Not not literally, but I mean just like emotionally. Like, wow, whoa. And you've likened Daniel, in terms of how much God loves him, to the Apostle John, Don.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. So there are so many parallels between the two.
Daniel and John loved God. Of course, you know, John was the beloved of Jesus and beloved of God. So they got special revelation.
And the parallels are astounding. And today we're merging into, I think we're going to get to finally to chapter 11 of Daniel, which intimidates me right off the get-go here. Now, he's been talking about Darius the Mede, the first year of Darius. Now, Darius, as we recall from chapters past, is not a person, but a title. I mean, he is a person, but that's his title, not his name. And he is the Medo-Persian representative of Cyrus here. And he's been referred to before in a previous chapter by Daniel, but now Daniel's just had another vision, and is he now relating it to Darius? Is that what's going on here?
Well, if you recall, the angel came to Daniel and said, you know, I've been fighting this battle, and I couldn't get away. You've been fasting and praying for 3 weeks, and I've come, and I'm going to reveal the future, basically the future to you. All of man's history is what it turned out to be. I need to go back. And so he goes back, and then apparently he's come back now.
Okay.
And so he's given Daniel the vision and these last few chapters here.
It's interesting that angels, that their course would be interrupted somehow, that something, maybe a higher priority would come up and plans would change. That astounds me.
Yes. And of course, what was about to happen in Persia is that Alexander the Great was going to come along and defeat the Persian king and the Persian Empire.
Well, now, let's get a little look at the timeline here, because I know you disagree with this, but I've heard from some scholars that the book of Daniel was probably written in the 6th century, about the time the first refugees came from Babylon back to Jerusalem and attempted to build the temple. It was during that time period, almost the intertestamental period, the Nehemiah era. But you think it was written earlier, and that actually Nebuchadnezzar wrote part of it himself. That would have put it about the 7th century, 8th, not 8th century.
Oh, let me see. I might have a timeline here. Nebuchadnezzar's dream, let's see.
Well, because Babylon invaded, it was like 570 B.C.
Nebuchadnezzar's dream was 602 B.C.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Babylonian captivity was 606, and around 602.
So it was the 570s when they brought down the temple, then, when they destroyed Jerusalem, 30 years later.
Yeah, okay. So there you go.
All right.
So it could have, and of course these visions weren't given to Daniel or to Nebuchadnezzar, for that matter, all at the same time. This is, we're covering quite, pretty much all of Daniel's life here. And so there's a good period of time that, these visions cover. And the messenger coming from God to tell him, for example, in chapter 9, the vision of the 70 weeks actually occurred, according to my notes, 538 B.C. I would find it hard to believe that Daniel would just keep these things to himself and did not write them down. Now, they could have been compiled into a book, sometime later, but not to have written them down right after you got the vision, These visions are so complex that you would want to write it down.
Well, it's possible that there were a number of writings with this information, and someone simply assembled it and published it as a book, because anything is possible. But we got the information in a logical lump here in this book. Whoever did that, whether it was Daniel or somebody else, and Alexander the Great,
it could have been compiled by somebody else and just put together, because they're not in chronological, the chapters are not, as we talked about before, mm-hmm. not in chronological order. Mm-hmm.
And so that suggests that if someone else did indeed compile this information, they may not have been privy to all the actual history, but they knew the information was important and made it a logical whole for us. Now, Alexander's still 200 years away, right?
Yeah, so we've got some interesting things coming up here in Chapter 11. And Chapter 11, let me get to my summary. I had my summary slide. So Chapter 11 of Daniel covers from the Persian Empire down to Armageddon scenario at the end of the chapter. So we're covering all of the rest of history, basically, in this chapter. And verses 1 and 2 are the Persian Empire. 3 and 4 are the Greek Empire. And then we have this rivalry between two of Alexander's generals, Seleucid and Ptolemy. And they rival for quite some time, and that covers verses 5 through 35.
Let me start. I'm going to read 5, because this is after we know that the Alexander conquered, and his empire was divided into 4, and the king of the south, which would have been Egypt, the Ptolemies. But one of his princes shall be stronger than he, and shall rule, and his authority shall be a great authority. And maybe it's 6 that really gets to me. After some years, they shall make an alliance, and the daughter of the king of the south. The daughter of the king of the south.
Yes.
Is that an actual female? Will come to the king of the north to make an agreement, but she shall not retain the strength of her arm, and he and his arm shall not endure. But she shall be given up, and her attendants, he who fathered her and he who supported her in those times. That's total mystery to me.
Well, yes. So let's unpack that. Since you started there, I don't know if people are interested in the earlier verses. They probably are. But it is. So we have.
I'm trying to identify the woman.
Okay. This is Antiochus II, Theos, and Ptolemy's daughter, is Ptolemy the Second's daughter, who is Berenice, supplanting his first wife, Laodice, who eventually killed her and her children. So Ptolemy the Second's first wife is quite jealous of Berenice and winds up killing her. So that's what those verses are talking about, are these characters. And the north, it's often, the king of the north or the king of the south. So we have the Seleucid, which is the king of the north, the Seleucid Empire, if you will, that was kind of like 1/4 of Alexander's the Great Empire. And he's got the area which is Syria and covers part of Israel, for example.
And that would be Antiochus, who was the king under the Seleucids, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so there are many kings in both of the north and the south, and it's a whirlwind of Middle Eastern history, if you will, in this chapter, and certainly in the beginning part of the chapter. So Ptolemy was northern Egypt. It was Egypt, basically, and also part of the southern part of Israel. And these two kings are fighting back and forth with each other. Sometimes the north winds, sometimes the south winds. And so most of the chapter 11 is about these skirmishes. And so we have trying to make peace or an alliance here. Bernice is interceding, if you will, and it didn't go well because the wife of the first wife of Ptolemy the Second. Now Ptolemy the Second is the son of Ptolemy the First, who was one of Alexander's generals, and so this is you know, his daughter that is involved, you know, in all of this. And then you get, by this time, and from a branch from her roots, one shall arise, and this is verse 7, in his place, and he shall come against the army and enter the fortress of the king of the north. So we're talking about he being a southern king, and he shall deal with them and shall prevail. So Ptolemy the Third, Eurygetus, is the brother of Berenice, takes revenge, and this is the third Syrian war, if you will, and he prevails. And so, okay, all is good, except for, you know, the Seleucid Empire is not good for them at the moment. And he shall also carry off to Egypt their gods with their metal images and their precious vessels of silver and gold. In some years he shall refrain from attacking the king of the north. So there's a period of time where there's some peace. Now, the spoil that he brings back, just to put things in perspective here, you don't get the full picture as to, you know, he shall carry off their precious vessels of silver and gold. The spoil is 4,000 talents of gold, and a talent is 75 pounds. So 75, you know, times 4,000 is a lot of pounds of gold. And he had to have an entourage in order to carry that back. And 40,000 talents of silver and 2,500 idols. So he's got quite a haul here.
And that information comes from extra-biblical sources, correct?
Yes, it's not here in Daniel. I mean, you have to look at you know, ancient history to pull that off. But mm-hmm. it's the war that was mentioned here, and you can kind of follow it once you piece these things together.
That would be 300,000 pounds of gold.
300,000 pounds. Can you imagine, I mean, what that would be worth today when you got, you know, 1 ounce of gold being $3,000? I mean, that's a lot of gold.
So now we're talking billions.
Yeah, billions, exactly. Then the latter shall come into the realm of the king of the south, but shall return to his own land. His sons shall wage war and assemble a multitude of great force, which shall keep coming and overflow and pass through, and again shall carry the war as far as the fortress. So I mean, if you look at this, I mean, yes, okay, so it's symbolic. It's kind of, you know, unless you know the history, you don't know exactly who he's talking about, but after what's really going on here is after 2 years, Seleucus II marched south. So the son of Seleucus I marches south and got beaten badly, and then he returns home with a much smaller army. So a lot of his army gets defeated. And then Antiochus III resumes war with Egypt. So Antiochus, another descendant of Seleucus I, he resumes the war. And so it says his sons shall wage war and assembly. So, but now remember, all of this was written, or the angel gave this to Daniel years and years before any of this took place. And, you know, look at the detail that the angel is giving. I mean, he's describing these wars, who's winning, who's losing. And
I can just envision Daniel shaking his head and rolling his eyes. What is all this?
I don't know what you're talking about, but I guess I'm going to write it down. You know, he was a good steward of what was given to him. So I'm, you know, he probably, my vision of this is that he wrote it down exactly.
Well, when an angel talks, you want to keep a record of it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And he didn't have the modern technology saying, you know, wait a minute, let me get out my cell phone so I can record what you're saying here. Mm. That would have been awesome, you know, to hear the angel speaking, which, you know, had
well,
to be
one note of context here. This was an oral society. There was not a lot of writing going on. And people were attuned to what they hear, and they seized it and remembered it much more clearly, much more thoroughly than we do today.
Yes, this is correct. But Daniel was an educated man,
he
would have had the ability to write things down. And yes, okay, they're going by, you know, my theory of devolution, their minds would have been much sharper than our minds.
We have to explain Dr. Don's theory that every generation since the beginning, since the garden, has resulted in mutations, and so we are not as bright as those who came before. And it continues in that direction until something important changes it. So
right.
There.
So if you look back, you know, if you use that, then okay, the first humans, Adam and Eve, Adam had to be extremely bright. And of course, he had full faculties. And then, you know, things kind of decayed from there once.
But Daniel would have retained this because it would have made quite an impact long enough to go back and write it down.
Now remember from chapter 10, he was trembling and he fell down, you know, as if not, you know, dead, and the angel had to touch him a couple of times to get him up, if you will. So he's kind of shaking in his boots over all this, because the angel was impressive. This was a big guy, and he was glowing. His eyes were like fire, which kind of, you know, gave you the sense that, well, maybe this is Jesus himself, you know, we don't think so, because it was a messenger.
But then he had the appearance of a man, so he calmed down or deglowed or something. But enough. Daniel was riveted on this, and he retained it, and he wrote it down, and that's important stuff. But this is incredibly detailed, and now that we have the perspective of history, and you could research Middle Eastern history, that place was a mess for eons.
Yes. And we're reading some of the mess. So let's continue with the mess. And it says the king of the south, moved with rage, shall come out and fight against the king of the north. I mean, this battle goes on for a while, and he shall raise a great multitude, but it shall be given into his hands. And when the multitude is taken away, his heart shall be exalted, and he shall cast down tens of thousands, but he shall not prevail. So the king of the south gathers together a great army to fight against the king of the north. And, you know, he has this battle. He's exalting himself. So pride rises up. Look how great I am. Now, if you remember King Nebuchadnezzar, you know, winds up saying that and winds up eating grass for a while. So the pride gets to him for the king. So let's continue, because it's part of the whole battle here. For the king of the north shall again rise, a multitude greater than the first, and after some years he shall come on with a great army and abundant supplies. In those times, many shall rise against the king of the south, and the violent among your own people
the
shall
lift themselves the Jews, the Jews now we're talking about.
Okay. And we're going to explain why here. And your own people, whose own people, God's people, shall lift themselves up in order to fulfill the vision, but they shall fail. So Antiochus sets out with even a larger army to conquer the Egyptian territory and several skirmishes, but eventually none were able to stand. So the Egyptian king fights against the Antiochus III. Antiochus comes with a larger army. He can't defeat the Egyptian army, and eventually we're kind of at a standstill at this point. Then the king of the north shall come and throw up sage works and take a well-fortified city, and the forces of the south shall not stand, or even his best troops, for there shall be no strength to stand. But he who comes against him shall do as he wills, and none shall stand before him, and he shall stand in the glorious land. So the glorious land is Judah, is Israel, basically, with destruction in his hand. So the glorious land, like I said, is Judah. So now we're talking about Israel. And he shall set his face to come with the strength of his whole kingdom, and he shall bring terms of an agreement and perform them, and he shall give him the daughter of a woman to destroy the kingdom, but it shall not stand or be to his advantage. So in 197 BC, Antiochus III sets out with a fleet to attack the solution and Kyria under Egyptian control, but encounter a major defeat at the banks of the Tiber, up and coming Rome, basically. So Rome is starting to form here in all of this midst. And Antiochus III's daughter, none other than Cleopatra, given in marriage to Ptolemy, 10 years younger, so Cleopatra is given to marriage to Ptolemy, who's 10 years old. He's only 10 years old, but she sides with with Egypt and with Rome. So this beautiful woman named Cleopatra, she's kind of given in marriage to kind of settle things between the two kingdoms. But unfortunately, this guy is pretty young, and she's siding with Egypt and Rome.
Now, this would have been the time toward the end of the Roman Republic, just before Caesar was established as immortal. I mean, just before the great naval battle. This is pretty amazing stuff. Now, I imagine Rome was pretty much in bad condition at the end of the Republic, because generals were fighting other generals, just like here in the Middle East. This was a time of tremendous violence.
Yes, it was. And, things aren't quite settling down, because Rome has to rise up as the next empire, if you will, because we've got this skirmish with the Greek, generals that have been given, and there's a descendant. So we're talking about a large number of years here that have passed.
Okay, now I want to link Revelation to this, because this is what's coming to my mind, and you please tell me if this is off base or premature or something, but this looks like the Middle East in disarray and a Western power about to take advantage of it, because they failed to get a hold of their own cultures, their own society, and establish a civilized situation, a culture. The Romans came in and totally threw them for a loop forever until now.
Yeah, forever. I mean, they overthrew them basically, and Rome.
This reminds me of what we're seeing now, the Middle East in disarray.
Yes, and there is prophecy, for example, that the peoples of Gaza will no longer be in Gaza, which is interesting.
Hmm.
I mean, but that's in a different
really
book, completely. Yes.
Really?
That's in, I believe it's Zechariah 2, or Zechariah chapter 2, I believe that is. But, don't hold me to that.
Now you're going to tell me that Gaza will become an ocean resort with golf courses.
Well, it doesn't quite say that. It just says that the people aren't going to be there.
Wow.
And you can see why. I mean, Israel cannot, which is a totally different, subject. We're kind of off the subject in a sense. Israel cannot allow Hamas to exist, because Hamas, their charter is to wipe Israel off the face of the earth.
This is a good place to maybe transition, because we'll want more of this next week. And the fun of all this is fast forwarding to the current time, the present age, and seeing similarities, and seeing that in all these prophecies, there's us. We have a place.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And then we're going to fly by our generation and get to ultimately Armageddon in this chapter.
Mm.
It's amazing. I mean, because it covers the 400 years of silence between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And it gives such detail of these armies that are fighting each other, these kings that are fighting each other, and who winds up winning, and details of this daughter who happens to be Cleopatra, that we can identify as Cleopatra because of the the time frame and everything. It is amazing. Daniel, if you haven't studied the book of Daniel, I encourage you greatly, because it is one of the proof texts that God is real. And the Bible is accurate and real, and we can rely on it for everything that it says.
And we can rely on Dr. Don to continue where we left off next week. I hope we can, too. Are you going to be available next week? Next Tuesday?
I am going to be available.
Okay. Well, we will, we will be excited to hear that. And take us where we go next in the book of Daniel. Don, the member of the Board of Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com, and you'll find information there, scientific information that teaches the biblical story of creation, and that will help you in your discussions around the water cooler with others to help enlighten them as well. So we recommend a visit to creationmoments.com. Don, we'll see you next week.
All righty. Very good. Y'all take care.